Schofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas. Jeff Carlson is here. It's Schofield live, front yard, Ellis Island. Chargers, Eagles. Eagles continue to face the gauntlet around the National Football League, and while 8-4 is not what they expected, it's pretty damn good considering the schedule they played. Same cannot be said for another team that has faced the gauntlet, and that is the Kansas City Chiefs, who lost again yesterday. We'll get to that story. Hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Eagles, check that. Chiefs are not going to win the division. Was just checking out some notes on some of the TVs here. We know that Josh Simmons is down. Now, another tackle is out for the Chiefs. So lots of injuries to get to after another week of the National Football League. And, of course, some UNLV stuff. Caleb Herron will join us. Big UNLV weekend, good and bad. Going to a bowl game, but lost a football game on Friday. So Caleb joins us in the 5 o'clock hour. Jeff, how are you?
Interesting weekend, huh? Interesting weekend. And you didn't even mention the most controversial thing of the entire weekend.
We'll get to it. I don't want it to overwhelm the show because I know not everyone is into college football, but I got a lot to say on it. Although I think I'm going to be a little more composed. I'm going to try to be a little more nuanced and thoughtful about the CFP and the screw job, because this is inevitable. And the other thing is, I actually cover college football like you do the entire season, so I'm not some Johnny come lately who sounds like a jackass like so many of the national media people do, because it's a hot topic now, but week to week they don't cover it. And maybe they're faking, maybe they're willfully sounding ignorant, but we all knew this was going to happen in some form or fashion. Now there's some weird stuff that happened along the way, but we'll get to it. That's coming up in about 25 minutes. Parles is here, ESPN Las Vegas. Lots of NFL to get to, but I do want to mention UNLV's weekend. First of all, they go to the Mountain West Conference title game. They play Boise again. They lose to Boise again. Did they close the gap this year? Maybe, because I still walk away from both losses thinking that physically, for the most part, they can match up with Boise. I don't know that this defense and the scheme they play is the right defense to go against Boise's offense, because it didn't work again, and there were way too many chunk plays on Friday night, and UNLV certainly could have won that game, but you can't give up five chunk plays of 35 yards plus, 10 overall of 10 yards plus. I think for the game, Boise was like 6.9 yards per play. So little things like tackling and surprisingly effort at times cost the Rebels a chance to win the Mountain West Conference title.
They can't get in a 21-0 hole either. That didn't help things either. You know, that opening drive, I just go back to the opening drive of the game. Calandria seemed in rhythm, and it was an effort play. The fumble was an effort play, trying to get an extra few yards, and a fumble that turned into, they got a stop actually on that right after that fumble. But really, that kind of set the tone now, where, all right, even on a good drive, it ended in negative fashion. It's funny. I know the numbers didn't look great. I actually thought Calandria played really well in the game.
I think it's to be debated, and yeah, we'll talk to Caleb Herron in the 5 o'clock about 5 o'clock hour about this part. They took a lot of deep shots early in the game, which normally I like, but it also puts you in a position of being behind the chains, which means you have to respond sometimes on second down and long and be able to run the ball and physically up front. They couldn't do that. But, you know, when I talked to Dan Mullen after the game during the post-game conversation, he said that's what the Boise defense is designed to give you. They're gonna have their guys on an island, and they're going to give you opportunities, or at least it's going to look like the best opportunities on a pass player to go downfield. And they just couldn't hook up. And they were off by a few inches here or there. But physically, I think they had a little tough time in the trenches stopping the run. And, yeah, the fumble kind of stymied some positive momentum at the beginning of the game. It would have been great to get out to a lead to start.
Well, you never know. If you get a touchdown on that opening drive and there's a big third down conversion mixed in there as well, like, so maybe it's a totally different game. It probably isn't, because in the end, UNLV's defense, I think what you said is right. The scheme to go against the higher end offenses just isn't there. We saw it through this year, and I don't think it's a talent issue either. I think there's more than enough talent on that defense at this point. I think there's not the right scheme.
There's a scheme mismatch from this standpoint. They recruited to play a 3-3-5.
Yep.
Zach Arnett went bye-bye, the intended DC. Gunther had to step up, and he installed his defense, which is a pro defense. And, like, I'll point to a guy specifically. Jake Pope is a strong safety who came in from Alabama and Georgia. And a lot of times this year he had to play more free safety. And I really feel like in the 3-3-5, he would have been more in that hybrid linebacker coverage position. A lot of blitzes. And he was put in a position where he's not exactly comfortable. They have other strong safeties who also were probably better suited to be in less coverage, you know, less decision-making points. So they lose. They're going to a bowl game, which is an immense positive. They're going to play Ohio in the Frisco Bowl, which is at Jerry's World, the smaller one, in Frisco, Texas. Nice matchup. Not easy. Good running quarterback for Ohio, so that'll present some challenges, as we saw with games like the one against New Mexico. But, you know, the way the CFP turned out with Tulane winning and getting in and JMU getting in because the ACC fell short because Duke had five losses, there is still a feeling around, at least for me, around the UNLV season with a couple of tweaks, better execution, less penalties, because it happened again. They had five illegal procedures in this one, that there was a door open that sadly with the CFP and the group of six may never be open again, because these sons of bees are going to batten down the hatches, and right now, you know, they're rolling over in their graves and they're very much alive. They're pissed about JMU. And it's going to make it harder in the future for the UNLVs, anyone from the Pac-9, whatever it's going to be, the American, the Sun Belt, the MAC, to make it.
I think it's going to be almost impossible with whatever new format they decide to do, unless, again, like I'm curious now what happened, and we'll get into it later, what happened yesterday of that 12-team tournament's not going to be there next year. It's going to be more teams next year. They already extended the date out to be able to figure out what the format is for the 26 and the 27 season. I'm just curious, but boy, the fact that two non-power conference champions got in because the ACC is inept, I don't see that happening again, unless if there's guaranteed two, hey, G6, you're getting two moving forward, which unless they go to
16.
I think they'd have to go to 24 for that to happen.
Yeah, okay. I get it. You're right. I think at 16, they'll still be like, nope, just one.
They could go to 24. Like, what happened yesterday could cause them to totally lose their minds.
Basketball team went on the road, and, you know, they haven't been playing well lately. They haven't been healthy either. They played some close games through three quarters of the game, UNLV basketball, against Maryland and Rutgers in that Players' Era tournament. They got kind of boat race against Alabama, went on the road against a solid Stanford team, and they fell behind, and they fell behind again, and they fought, and they fought, and they fought. They didn't make a lot of threes, but their defensive intensity the last 5 minutes got them back in the game and got them a win, and that's a good thing for Josh Pastner, as now he's got some winnable games coming up, and maybe they can get healthy and be in decent shape headed towards conference season, which, believe it or not, starts in about 2 weeks.
I was going to say, the win yesterday just kind of changes the whole vibe of the non-con a little bit, right?
I mean, it does. The biggest thing, Jeff, is they got to stack it together. They can come back this week against Tennessee State and have four guys pop up on the injury report and lose that game. They're not going to lose to La Sierra. They better beat Fresno, who looks like, you know, one of the bottom four teams in the Mountain West Conference. Right now, it's all about just getting healthy. And they had some good fortune in terms of health. They finally got their intended, rim protector, backline big guy in a zone, Emmanuel Steffen, back, who I thought would be kind of a hustle defensive player, you know, maybe scrappy around the rim. And he goes out, and he's making turnaround jumpers, hook shots. He had 18 and 10. And Stanford had, you know, they had some good size, and he freaking schooled them.
By the way, who's La Sierra?
One of those end-of-the-year games that New Year's week is always a bit of a challenge. Although that said, man, as you pointed out, some of the big boys are on college basketball. Like, Duke's schedule has been unreal. Illinois' schedule, you mentioned Alabama.
Oh, Alabama's ridiculous.
Is insane. I'm sure UNLV could have found another game, but they usually have a little easier mark either during the rodeo or just after the rodeo. So, yeah, they'll play La Sierra and then go into the new year, and they'll have one Mountain West Conference game under their belt and then go into the Mountain West Conference schedule, which at this point, that's kind of what matters because, you know, they didn't get out to the start of the first nine games they wanted to.
All I'll say is, Cofield, their next four games, they should be 4-0. Tennessee State, Fresno, you get Air Force mixed in there, and then, of course, that game against La Sierra. You go 4-0, and then you're going up to Laramie again. And that's a winnable game, too, up in Laramie against a okay Wyoming team.
Well, those games will be fun because they actually, I think it's going to be an extended road trip where I think they might stay on the road the whole time. They have a Tuesday and a Friday game, Wyoming and Fort Collins.
Yeah.
So those are sort of, you know, sister areas. So if they were able to get that, through that with a couple of wins, and we'll get on from college basketball here because we got a lot of NFL. But what I'm excited about in the conference is that UNLV is trying to run and is averaging, you know, whatever it is now, 84 points a game, 85 points a game. Wyoming's averaging 84. CSU's averaging 84. Grand Canyon wants to run. New Mexico wants to run. They had 98 the other day against a good Santa Clara team. So I think the conference season is not only going to be really competitive, but it may break the mold away from the bully brawl ball that we've had to witness over the years with San Diego State and Boise State dominating in the conference.
Very possible. Utah State's pretty good, too.
And Utah State's been averaging a lot of points, and they want to run, too.
Utah State's good. By the way, just to put the bow on the college hoops, what Iowa State did to Purdue on Saturday,
incredible, right?
Is one of the most insane. It was the highest margin of defeat a number one team ever had at home in non-con. It was crazy. Michigan's really good. Duke, really good win at Michigan State.
Arizona.
Arizona's awesome. I mean, that we said last year the top teams were going to be hard to beat in March. Might be the same deal again, that the top teams are – we might not see many upsets in the tournament yet again for the second
season. Well, you know, I'm going to take your predictions, and you're looking ahead with a grain of salt, because I remember sitting here about 3 weeks ago, maybe it's 4 weeks ago, and you were talking about the playoff pictures being kind of boring in the AFC and the NFC. And, you know, while the Chiefs are on the outside looking in, everyone's assuming the Chiefs, they're going to do it. Oh, boy. This thing has fallen apart. A lot of their injury luck, and they were beat up at wide receiver last year, but a lot of their injury luck has turned on them. Their ability to win close games has completely gone out the window. And yesterday, the Texans and that defense took care of them. And then I think you thought that Andy Reid even came a little unraveled.
Oh, I was actually more calm than the others. I was, of course, with all the years I spent in Missouri, half of my friends are Chiefs fans, so all the text messages I was getting when Andy Reid went for it on that 4th-and-1, tied 10-10 in the fourth quarter in his own end, just total, utter freakout. And then as I thought about it longer, I was like, you know what? I think the freakout from the fan base is right on that, because Kansas City's defense had Stroud completely lost at the beginning of that second half. He didn't have a completion until the fourth quarter in the second half. And you can't give them a short field. It's a game that you're probably going to have to win 13-10 at that point if you're Kansas City, maybe 17-13. But, boy, it is incredible to see. And really, I hate to praise the Patriots' run for the two decades, obviously. But the only year they missed the playoffs after year two was the year that Brady got hurt, and they still won double-digit games with Matt Castle. Makes that run look even more insane, where Kansas City's, I mean, they're going to go 8-9 at this rate. And Mahomes is going to play all 17 games. That's staggering, in all honesty. And also good on the Texans, who, Cofield, that defense, there is no other unit in the AFC that is anywhere near that Texans defense in the way of ability and consistency. And even though I have my questions about that coaching staff and C.J. Stroud, when you have a defense that's that good and a unit that's stable, in a conference that's super unstable, he got a shot here.
On the way back, we'll talk about the Raiders road game yesterday against the Broncos. Oh, they were at home. Boy, that felt like a road game. That's a depressing atmosphere for Raiders fans. 2-11 now on the year, and we are fully in lose, root to lose mode, and starting to look at quarterbacks in the draft or whoever else they can acquire in terms of fresh new talent for this Raiders team. We'll get to all the other big storylines in the National Football League. We're hanging out here at the Front Yard, Ellis Island. Monday Night Football is on the way. Really good game, really important game with the Chargers going up against the Eagles. When you come down, any pro football day, Monday, Thursday, or Sundays, they've got all-you-can-drink beer. They've got all-you-can-drink spirits. Those are available in packages. And then all-you-can-eat. All of those packages are under $50. Jeff, you've been scouring the menu. You've been doing a lot of research. Do you have something in mind 3 hours out? that you need to try. Last week, I saw you try to take down the rigatoni.
I did.
And,
I got it done.
Oh, you made it through.
Oh, I got it done.
Wow, you're impressive. That's an eating contest level.
That was it was a lot of work, but it was delicious. I wasn't going to leave any of
the mix in a salad this week.
Maybe. You know, we're going to have to talk to our guy, Mateo, during the break.
He controls the ordering. Well, the food is tremendous. It's tough to get through the menu here, and they've got it going with the holiday. NFR is in town. They've got a ribeye special. We'll tell you about that. The legendary Nog, the iconic Nog, is back by the glass or by the bottle. It's a Monday night. You want to watch the game here with Jeff Parles and Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas. As here is Ellis Island in the front yard. It's all brought to you by Boomer Sportsbook.
Now back to Cofield and Company live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
Lots of NFL to get to. We'll give you some picks, some lean likes for Monday Night Football as well. Good capper to the week, Nick Bogdanovich. One of the bosses at Boomer Sportsbook will join us in about an hour. It's Parles, it's Cofield, it's ESPN Las Vegas. Ellis Island Front Yard is the site. When you come down here, you can sign up for the Boomer Sports account. Great. I use it all the time. The bonus. I think I blew through the bonus. I put in 250. You get up to $250 in bonus bets. I'm above what I deposited. I don't bet a whole lot. I just want some action here and there. I did a money line. Once BYU got out to the lead against Texas Tech, I did a small money line bet, and then nothing happened the rest of the way for Bear Bachmeyer and BYU. And they're out, and they're one of the many schools out there and fan bases and lots of content creators bad-mouthing others. What happened to the Lord? Let's all be nice, right? Let's all be nice with the Mormons and the Catholics, right? I'm Catholic. Notre Dame, let's be nice. Let's not be threatening people. We'll get to that in less than 10 minutes. Boy, if you're a Raiders fan, probably didn't pay to threaten anyone because you were outnumbered 10-1 yesterday at Allegiant. It wasn't that bad, but it was bad. And it's the kind of season they're having, and we know what mode they're in right now. First of all, Geno Smith went down, so Kenny Pickett gets to play. Got to see a little positive from Kenny Pickett. Young guys played. What's your biggest read on the game and the freaking special teams? Again, it's every week is something with the special teams. I don't remember them having issues week to week in years past, but now you have a punt return touchdown. That's annoying.
Poorly coached team and not enough depth on the roster. I mean, that's the easiest explanation for the special teams fiascos. And it was not a particularly good punt either that caused, I mean, well, it was barely a 50-yard return, so you're punting from your own end zone and such. But, you know, I thought Kenny Pickett looked okay. He was thrown into a totally awful situation when he has to come in the goal-to-go scenario where they're backed up and Pickett airmails the target. The touchdown throw was a nice throw. Geno was awful while he was out there before he got hurt yesterday. Just kind of what he is at this point. I think Geno just doesn't know what he's seeing because he's just expecting to get hit as quickly as humanly possible behind that awful offensive line. And then, Cofield, I come away, by the way, from the Denver perspective, I come away with nothing from that game. They did what they were supposed to do. They came on the road against a team they're much better than. They won the game, and it was never really in doubt.
Every week is a one-score game. But every week, it's just weird.
What Carroll did yesterday at the end of the game is one of the more preposterous things I think I've ever seen.
And we should point that out, that the Raiders did come back at the end and then kick a field goal with under 10 seconds left.
Under 10 seconds? They kicked the field goal at triple zeros at the end. Huh. It was a 46-yard kick. It started with 5 seconds. So even let's just think about this real quick. What could have possibly been going through? Oh, and by the way, the penalty that caused them to be in field goal range with 5 seconds left was pretty nonsensical also. And then Carroll kicks the field goal from 46 yards with 5 seconds. Best case scenario, you're going to have 1 second left. The clock has to run if you recover an onside kick. The game's over anyway. It's preposterous. It's completely preposterous. Oh, and by the way, I did not have Denver -8.5 yesterday, Woo. Thankfully. I did not have the under in that game, thankfully. But, boy, I don't like having my tinfoil hat on at all, Cofield, but there's no logical explanation for Pete Carroll kicking that field goal yesterday. It just isn't.
I don't want to go down this path because I'm not young, but Are you feeling any Tom Coughlin vibes with Pete Carroll and the end of Tom Coughlin, which a lot of people were like, he doesn't feel like he knows what's going on in situation within games sometimes.
Oh, boy. It feels insulting to Coughlin. I know it was bad at the end of the Giants, but that team was... Yeah,
Pete Carroll's been that much worse.
The Giants were still, like, ultra-competitive in that final year of Coughlin. They just lost every close game, if my memory serves me correctly.
I just remember clock management being a real issue.
Yeah, Coughlin's clock management I never really loved to begin with, even at his best. But I thought the game had passed Pete by at the end at Seattle. I thought the Seahawks were completely justified in letting him go when they did, even though it was a surprise. Obviously, it's work because McDonald's a superstar, as that's proven. And look, at the time, I thought, look, the Antonio Pierce year was a complete disaster. It's probably a good thing to bring Pete in. It'll change the culture and at least have a better clue than what Pierce did. Pierce has been better than Carroll has been this year. It's not even a debate. And Pierce was a bottom five coach last year. I understand it's hard to, like, three coaches in 3 years after the McDaniel fiasco and before that, and obviously having it happen with Gruden before that, but that's the Raiders for you. So, by the way, they're not winning another game. They're losing out.
And I think a lot of Raiders fans would say they better not win another game.
Well, and if they lose out, look, Tennessee hosts New Orleans, so very winnable game for Tennessee, even though the Saints might not be as awful as their record shows at the moment. And the Giants, I just feel like the Giants have way too much talent to lose out at this point. But they've found a way to do it so far. I don't see the Raiders winning another game, and that's great news. If the Raiders lose out and get the first pick, you love Fernando Mendoza. He's yours. You don't even have to give up any extra compensation.
College football, the playoff bracket is set. I think it's going to be a great tournament. You knew someone was going to get screwed, but I did not expect my number two team in the country, Notre Dame, to get jobbed, and man, all hell's about to break loose.
In 3, 2, 1, take.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
Good times in college football. We got a college football playoff year number two. It looks like a pretty balanced field. Saw some crazy, crazy results over the weekend with teams winning titles and championships that they had won in, you know, 50, 60 years. So, once again, as I predicted, college football is more balanced than it's ever been, and it's driving the powers that be a little batty. CFP had a tough decision, and we knew the last couple weeks there were going to be some schools left out that had a case, but the field's just not big enough, and in the end, you lost games. So you didn't take care of what you needed to take care of. I think the most disturbing thing with Notre Dame is that the CFP seemed to suggest for weeks and weeks and weeks that it didn't think that Miami's early season win over Notre Dame was a deal breaker for Notre Dame, right? That Miami wasn't going to jump just because of a head-to-head victory, and then they completely reverse course, and Notre Dame looks up and they're like, wait, what the hell just happened?
That is, from a logical perspective, the biggest issue with the whole thing is the committee just flat-out lied for a month and then decided at the last minute, and it did matter. And look, head-to-head should matter, especially when the teams play each other. Now, granted, it was week one.
It was a field goal with 104 left in the game, a 27-24 final.
And look, forget that game. The other most important thing that ended up happening in this season was the non-called hold on Texas A&M.
41-40, and Texas A&M scored with less than 15 seconds left.
Because Texas A&M is in instead of Notre Dame. And A&M, by the way, A&M plays Miami. I think that line is completely wrong. I think Miami's going to beat them. It's going to be very fun when Miami beats Texas A&M and then gives Ohio State an extraordinarily tough game. But that's a different conversation for a different time. My biggest gripe is with Alabama being in. And this is honestly actually more to do with the SEC as a whole right now. Because the SEC got five teams in, and we knew this was going to happen, and then they're the still top to bottom. They are the best conference in the country. But other than Georgia, the other four teams, Georgia Georgia looked great on Sunday, other than that really one bad half against Alabama, and they'd be 13-0 this year. Ole Miss doesn't have their coach. Can't really penalize them for that, but don't have their coach. That's a
sure you can.
But that's.
But they won't do it to the SEC. Correct. They did it to Florida State for losing their quarterback.
Yeah, that's a little bit different.
By the way, is that why Notre Dame is out? Because their running back core is not at full strength?
Well, I think Love would be fine.
I'll tell you what, a lot of the stuff they mentioned was outrageous, but keep going.
Texas A&M ended up playing one of the weakest schedules of any power conference team. Wasn't their fault, but they ended up playing a very weak schedule. They beat Notre Dame because they by one in week two or week three. And they were completely non-competitive in the second half against Texas 2 weeks ago. Okay. Oh, and by the way, they were down 30-3 against South Carolina. You imagine the decision that could have ended up happening if they had ended up losing that game? They're lucky they ended up winning that game. We could have had a totally different discussion yesterday if that was the case, but then Notre Dame, then it would have been another head-to-head thing. Alabama, for Oklahoma, best resume of these SEC teams with one or two losses other than Georgia, but I think by far the worst of the five, even though they have the best resume, so I can't really fault it, even though I don't think they're all that good. Alabama the last 6 weeks has been genuinely mediocre, and you could argue they've been bad. They were non-competitive on Saturday, and they moved down zero spots.
Never happened.
Never happened before with a conference championship game loser moving down. Even
moving at all.
Georgia has played some of the most epic games ever in the SEC championship game that they lost to Alabama, and they moved down after losing those games. Alabama throws a stink bomb out there and doesn't move. Not penalized at all. Not penalized at all. That's the bigger issue that I have more than anything in this thing yesterday. I have no problem with Miami being in over Notre Dame. I'm good with head-to-head being important. Miami is clearly not a talent issue. They are arguably the most talented team in the country. They have a coach that I don't trust. That's the big reason they lost those two games. But a Notre Dame is right to be ticked off. The Notre Dame is right to be ticked off at the committee. They are right to be ticked off at the ACC because part of the reason that this has happened is because the ACC said, you know what? We're going to have five tiebreakers that somehow land on a 7-5 team getting into the conference championship game. And I'm losing. By the way, I'm fully convinced that if Virginia beats Duke on Saturday night, Notre Dame still gets in. The main reason that Miami is in, even more than the head-to-head, even more than anything else that's happened, is because the committee did not want to leave the ACC out. And, look, I don't know if that's right. I don't know if that's wrong. But that is the reason that I think more than anything else that transpired, Virginia losing to Duke on Saturday night put Miami in because they couldn't justify putting 8-5 Duke in, which was correct, by the way. Duke did not deserve to go.
More college football on the way. Steve Kim, the Korean Cosell, Confucius, is coming up. His Canes got in, but we'll get his reaction to Notre Dame getting booted. Here is Ellis Island, the front yard. Good game, Eagles and Chargers. Tweets. Notre Dame just got punished for a 3-point road loss to number 10 Miami on August 31st, while Alabama lost by 14 to a 5-7 Florida State team at the same time. SEC Bama bias in a nutshell. Steve Kim is with Parles and Cofield. Steve, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, just living off this buzz, man. We're on a high. Excuse me, guys. Just finalizing my book. It's booking to College Station. We're playoff bound. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. Very good. You'll be happy to hear, maybe. Jeff thinks that Miami is going to win this game. So, you know, let's talk about Miami getting in. I'm sure you were worried, but... Boy, for all the TV bluster the CFP put out there about head-to-head Miami-Notre Dame's not going to benefit Miami, they reversed course out of nowhere, didn't they?
Yeah, and I think, and I tweeted this about a week and a half ago, that the Miami-Notre Dame comparison or debate was a diversion, really about the pervasive influence of the SEC and their media partners. And the two teams that should really be upset based on the treatment is not just Notre Dame, but also BYU. I mean, guys, does the conference championship game count or not? Or does it only count in certain circumstances? And, yeah, head-to-head is a lot. It matters. The games matter. But if you're BYU, you're thinking, well, obviously, not being competitive against Texas Tech matters a lot more than getting run off the field by Georgia. And I get it. They're not perfect comparisons. I get it. Bama beat Georgia earlier in the year. But people should have known this was coming. When Alabama was moved up after struggling against a bad Auburn team, everybody kind of speculated that's a key move.
So do you believe, it sounds like it because you suggested it, do you believe there is a grand conspiracy here that with ESPN in control of things along, you know, with Fox partnership, but especially the SEC, it's good for business to make sure that the SEC has lots of participants in for ESPN?
Yeah, at least five. I think, look, I can't prove anything. All I can say is this. I think it's a lot more plausible what you stated than that, oh, no, everything's just on the up and up. You know, and look, for the people that say, well, you could change this by expanding the playoff field to 16. Well, then at that point, that means you're just going to – then the SEC, because their commissioner, Greg Sankey, said it last week, well, we actually deserve about seven teams. And I'm like, oh, good grief. And for all those people that say, well, the SEC should just break off. Like, go ahead, break off from the rest. See how that works out, really. And the process, it's not fair. I get it. Life is not fair. I just wish there was a little bit more transparency to it, because every single week when you had that unveiling of the playoff rankings, it's almost as if the criteria changed on the fly.
Steve, what if this is just good old-fashioned incompetence?
Well, it's like what I say about judging in boxing when you get a really dodgy, bad decision. Was it incompetence or was it corruption, and which is worse? You know, and I think one of the issues you have with the committee, there's not that many people that played ball or coached it. I mean, I know they try to get everyone involved, and I'm like, no, I'd rather just have football people that actually really love and care about football and watch it throughout the year, not just that weekend, because I said this to – I forgot who I said it to earlier. But, guys, to watch a lot of games properly and get a real good look at them, not just have the clip notes, you got to actually go into Tuesday and Wednesday of the following Saturday to continually watch all the games. It's the God's honest truth, Steve, because when I go to Coach JB's, yeah, we have a lot of games on, but I'm only human. There's only so many games I could really concentrate on, and everything else I'm just kind of skimming through. And I really wonder how many people within that committee, in those conference rooms, are really watching those games throughout the week to really get a breath of which teams are really good here.
Steve, what should Notre Dame do with the ACC? They're obviously today the AD. Went on Dan Patrick and talked about how upset he was at the conference, and then Jim Phillips put out a statement that pretty much shot back right at him.
Well, here's the issue for Notre Dame, and they are a national brand. They are the one school that can go independent, but how many other leagues, and there's not that many more, right? How many other conferences at that major level, it's basically a P4 now, right? Even though it's really just, let's face it, a big two. I don't know if the Big Ten or the SEC would allow Notre Dame to have such a agreement in place, right? And now, you know, this is not something that concerns me, but as an athletic director, you have to keep this in mind. What about the non-revenue sports? How do you schedule all of that? So I don't know. I think that's a very tough situation. I know a lot of ACC fans have said, well, wait a minute. Why isn't Notre Dame a full-time member? You know, so, but to be fair, not being in a conference and being independent was not the only reason why Notre Dame got left out. It'd be dishonest to say it was.
Are you with Paul Feinbaum, who, of course, works for ESPN? Notre Dame is not on ESPN. Are you like Feinbaum, who fired out that Notre Dame is just not that significant? They think they're a lot more significant. No one watches their games. They're not important.
Well, I didn't check the ratings. I don't, you know, it's not really my purview. But what does NBC stand for? Nobody cares. I mean, look, it's still a major brand. Okay, now they were the first ones. I remember this in 1991. And again, they were probably the only people that could do this. They had their own major broadcast deal to televise all their home games. And it was groundbreaking at the time. Well, I do think Mr. Feinbaum is correct. Guys, basically every team now has a game that's going to be televised throughout the week. There used to be a time long before the 21st century, you could only watch certain teams, even the best ones, two, three times a year. And even me as a Miami diehard, I could only watch about six or seven games if I really wanted to live, maybe at most. Now I can watch every single game, either through streaming, alternate platforms, all that stuff. So the impact of Notre Dame being like this national brand where everybody could watch him almost every single week or at least their home games, that part is true from Mr. Feinbaum. They don't have quite the cachet that they once did, let's say 25, 30, 40 years ago.
We are going to start examining some of the numbers, the lines for these games coming up on the 19th and the 20th, but there is an overarching theme, and that is certain programs are losing their coordinator or coordinators. Who do you think could take the biggest hit come their big-time game assignment coming up here? Ohio State with Hartline or Oregon losing both of their coordinators?
Well, how about a team that lost their head coach, Ole Miss?
That's a good point. And Tulane facing him, whose head coach is headed out. And James Madison, whose head coach is headed out.
Right. I mean, look, Ole Miss lost flat out their head coach. And say what you want about Kiffin. The guy is an offensive savant. He knows how to X and O and game plan and play call as much as anybody. I know everyone says he's never won anything. Well, okay, fine. But if you had one game to win and you had to drop an offensive game plan and have someone run your system, Kiffin would be on my very short list, regardless of all his flaws. Ole Miss, I think they got a very favorable draw. They're in the favorable part of the bracket. I think they're going to overcome that. But again, those other schools that lost coaches, they're not expected to win anyway. Ole Miss has an expectation to at least win a game or two in this tournament.
Steve Kim is with us. His spot is brought to you by Snack Nutrition. He's part of the Fearless crew. He joins ESPN Las Vegas on Mondays. We got a big fight on the way with Lopez and Shakur Stevenson. You looking forward to this one on Jan 31st in New York?
It's a good fight on paper. Now, two highly accomplished professionals. I'm not so sure that in reality, given their particular styles where they are both counterpunchers who rely on somebody leading and then they react to that. I don't know who leads in this fight. It could be a staring contest for 36 minutes. Seriously, styles make fights, and the bad styles spoil them. Keep that in mind. So I think it's a very good fight in terms of profile. I'm glad you got two guys under the age of 30 facing each other that have deep, vast resumes, but that alone does not equate to having a great night of entertainment.
How impactful on the sport of boxing is what happened last week in terms of future with these sanctioning bodies and Mauricio Sulaimán scolding and trying to guilt Terrence Crawford about $300,000 in sanctioning fees that he owns, but, you know, most of it was going to go to charity. We lowered the percentage from 3% to 0.8%. I watched that, and I was like, this is a freaking joke, and this has been a longstanding issue in boxing with these sanctioning bodies and the ABC with the belts.
Hey, we didn't extort you that much. In fact, we extorted you less than usual.
Yes.
Here's the issue. Most fighters still need the belt. They do. Every generation has a fighter or three that makes enough money, either it has enough star power or special circumstances like Terrence's overall achievement and the fact that Turki Alo-Sheikh really seems to, like, take into him, that could tell, like, the belt, hey, get the out of my life. Or, I don't need you. I don't want you, blah, blah, blah. And you've only got a couple fights left. The reality is every other fighter, for the most part, needs that belt. It helps them make more money, helps them attract opponents and other bigger-name foes. So, unfortunately, it's business as usual. I mean, guys, I've actually advocated for the sanctioning bodies to be needed. In fact, I think we need more than one. The fighters are not active enough. They all have to make a living. But the fact that they are so brazen in not enforcing their own rules and making it up as they go along, I hate to say it, they've become a net negative for the sport of boxing. Now, I don't know if Terrence Crawford alone can create this sea change without the sport, because I'm going to go back to it, guys. Most of these guys actually need those titles, and as my hashtag says on Twitter sometimes, belts matter.
Who should win the Heisman?
I'm going to go with Diego Pavia. I think he's meant more to his team than any other player, and he's become a better passer this year. And he's the type of player that one day Vanderbilt should have statues of. I think he's meant that much to that program.
Which quarterback will Miami buy in the offseason? Will it be they go really young with, like, Sangapolatele from Cal, or do they go to the top of the heap with a guy like Sam Leavitt?
I would prefer, if they're going to go that route, what it looks like they will, I want a guy with multiple years of eligibility. So I like the young man out of North Texas, Mestemaker.
Okay.
I like Sagapolatelli. I think he has the greatest arm talent of any true freshman. Leavitt is obviously out there. We'll see how it goes. And I don't know. Look, this is college football today. I feel bad for a program like Arizona State. You develop a guy, you get who, by the way, he came from Michigan State. But all of this movement, I think we better be very careful here. We are ripping up the fabric of college football.
I like the new ecosystem, and coaches know what they have to do. And sometimes you develop and you lose, and then you have to go out and bring a guy down from the level if they didn't work out at the higher level. So, but in the case of Miami, they're amongst the rich, so they're going to be able to grab pretty much whoever they want, and we'll see who they get in this offseason. But they got a game in front of them. Steve, enjoy the trip to College Station, and we're definitely looking forward to talking to you on Monday with the recap.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
It's 2 weeks from now, so I'm jumping ahead. I got excited. He's not going this week, which is actually good because I'm sure travel's a little less expensive. It was a freaking one-week turnaround.
How do you even get to College Station? What is that? Did they have their own airport, I'm pretty sure?
It's a good question. We got to look that up. Right now, I'm just worried about getting to Frisco, Texas in about 2.5 weeks. Hour one in the books. Hour two is on the way. More on the CFP, more on Notre Dame with more than threats. What can Notre Dame do to change the system?